Kids Are Not Defective, Part 2. The True Self versus the Fantasy Family.
Important to get children to read. Children who want to read are going to read. Kids who want to learn to read are going to learn to read. Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything. To question everything they read, everything they hear. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves and they don't want to undermine their own bullshit inside the household. Kids have to be warned that there's bullshit coming down the road. That's the biggest thing you can do for a kid. Tell them what life in this country is about. It's about a whole lot of bullshit that needs to be detected and avoided. That's the best thing you can do. No one told me. No one told me a thing like that. I was never warned about any of this.
When I have a child, I will answer all of their questions and open their minds to the wonders of the world. You can't answer a kid's question. They don't accept any answer. A kid never goes, oh, thanks, I get it. They never say that. They just keep coming, more questions. Why? Till you don't even know who the fuck you are anymore at the end of the conversation. It's an insane deconstruction. It's amazing. This is my daughter the other day. She's like, Papa, why can't we go outside? Well, because it's raining. Why? Well, water's coming out of the sky. Why? Because it was in a cloud. Why? Well, clouds form when there's vapor. Why? I don't know. I don't know any more things. Those are all the things I know. Why? Because I'm stupid, okay? I'm stupid. Why? Well, because I didn't pay attention in school, okay? I went to school, but I didn't listen in class. Why? Because I was high all the time. I smoked too much pot. Why? Because my parents gave me no guidance. They didn't give a shit. Why? Because they had bad morals. They just had no compass. Why? Because they had shitty parents. It just keeps going like that.
Everyone, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. The purpose of today's show, a little bit of an insert as a follow-up to the last show, the introduction to the series, Kids Are Not Defective. I was listening to that first show, and I had some additional thoughts that I thought there would be no better place to include than right here. I should start out by saying that May and June are very, very busy months for me. It's really the last shot at making any serious money, probably till about October. So I try to work as hard as I can and, you know, pick up as much business as I can during this part of the year, just because the summers are usually pretty dry. And I am actually going to try and take the entire month of July off from working, something that I have not done since I was a classroom teacher in 2005. So we'll see if I can pull that off. That being said, I should definitely say thank you to all of the new people who subscribed to the show this month and offered to make a monthly contribution. They are Dudley, Anna, David, Blake, and Travis. And, of course, to everybody else who throws us a little bit of cash every month. Right now, we're getting ready to go to Porkfest, and I recently had to do some show-related travel that I'll talk about for a minute. So it's nice to know that there's some extra funds to help things along as they relate to the show, and it's always greatly appreciated. On last Monday, Memorial Day, as it's called, I had to drive down to Connecticut to be interviewed for a movie directed by the Canadian filmmaker Paul Verge. I'll put some information about him and some of his past work in the show notes. As I know more about this project, I will fill you in on the details. The name of the film is Believers Beware. And I'm thinking these guys can turn these productions around pretty quickly, so I'm thinking it might be out within the next couple months. The house I went to shoot this interview while Paul was in Vancouver on Skype, another guy named Richard Andrew Grove, who runs the website tragedyandhope.com, filmed it in his living room. It was quite a cool experience. Richard Grove actually hosted the first podcast I ever listened to probably 5 years ago. It was called 9/11 Synchronicity Podcast. Richard was the Wall Street whistleblower. I think I mentioned him in an earlier episode. He has a very, very interesting story, and the style of that first podcast, now that I think about it, actually gave me some ideas about how I should try to produce a podcast, just as far as the whole style and presentation and tone. And his work has obviously just evolved tremendously in the last 5 years. So it was a neat experience to go and actually meet this person that I devoted a fair amount of time listening to years ago. And we had a great conversation, and he's a big fan of the show. So it was a very, very cool experience. Now, I think I said something there that might have caught a few people's attention. Yes, the first podcast that I ever listened to was very, very heavily focused on 9/11. Yes, that's where I was 5 years ago. And Richard really helped open my eyes and get me thinking about a lot of things. So thanks to him for his hospitality, and, of course, to his girlfriend, Lisa, who was wonderful and very hospitable as well. I look forward to getting back there to Hartford, Connecticut, and hanging out with those guys again. Now, like I said before, we're getting into some new territory. Up until this point in the show, it's been pretty easy for me to kind of casually plan out a show over the course of the week and then just sit down when I get a chance and record it all in one shot, maybe cutting here and there just to rethink some things or change some things. I'm sure that that's audible in the show anyway. Most of the things that I've talked about on the show so far have been very easy for me to talk about. I'm very fluent in the language of those topics. I was a history teacher. I know a lot about education. It's easy for me to talk about those things. But now, as I said, we're getting into some places where I realized I need to be a little bit more careful about some of the things that I say. And I was listening to the last episode. Nobody else called me out on these things. I was surprised, but there was a couple of examples of things that I wanted to address a little bit further in this show. At the end of the last show, I used the word observer to describe my relationship with my nephew and my niece. Now, I use that word really just to say that I am not part of the gang that is bullying these kids for their love or their attention or their affection, right? The point was that I enjoy kind of watching them do their own thing. And if they want to involve me, they can. I don't resist. It's not like I'm, you know, standing there taking notes about what they're doing. So I don't want to make it sound like this cold. I don't, you know, actually interact with them. I do. I just don't bully them for their attention. Now, there was something else that is a little bit more significant, I think. Towards the end of the show as well, I started talking about my own family experiences, and this is something, there's more to come as far as this is concerned on the show in the future. And I said something to the effect of, we're very good at becoming the defense attorney for our parents in the trial about how screwed up our childhood was. Now, that's an astute thing to point out, isn't it? But right after that, I started being the defense attorney for my parents, didn't I? I talked about my relationship with them now, and I mentioned something that happened when I was 3, and I kind of skipped everything in between. I didn't want that to seem like a cop-out. Something about that for me just wasn't all right. Like, I wanted to explore that a little bit more. What was I trying to do by, like, immediately jumping to the defense of my parents as soon as I started being critical of them? I think it's worth exploring that when we're impulsively or instinctively jumping to support certain things, that can offer us some very important clues about how we really feel. Because the truth is, my childhood wasn't all right. Because the truth is, nobody's childhood is all right. Because adults are yet to figure out pretty much how to treat young people. And I'm not saying that my parents were especially bad. I mean, oh, here comes Johnny Cochran again, but I remember moving out of the house when we moved out of the house that I grew up in, going through some of the books that were in the library in our house. And there's a lot of books like about, you know, old from around the time that I was born, like how to be a good parent, kind of how to books, right? There's plenty of books about what to do to be a good parent by this ancient standard of what it means to be a good parent. But the question of like, how do you be a good parent and how do you treat children respectfully? Two very, very different questions as far as how things have worked from one generation to another so far, right? We're always inheriting the mistakes of the previous generation. And for most people, it's applied to their own parenting. So as I went back and I listened to that show and I listened to me totally skip across the surface of, you know, all these details of my childhood where there's this one bad memory and poof, I'm an adult. There was a lot of stuff that happened in between. A lot of not so pleasant stuff. And when I heard myself talking that way, I reminded myself of this composite character, this archetype, this aggregation of several different personalities that I've interacted with in the, you know, over the past several years on the subject of raising children and how to treat children and how to discipline children, which is, you know, a lot of people really seem to enjoy talking about that subject. And this archetypal character, I kind of picture him as this old man who, not that old, but, you know, older, who grew up in the 40s or the 50s. And, you know, their whole affect is like, well, when I was growing up, my mother hit me in the face with a wooden spoon, and then my father came home from work and wailed on me all night with a belt. These kids today, it's nothing that a good old-fashioned ass-whooping couldn't fix. I got hit all the time, and I turned out fine. Yeah, old man, you turned out great. Look at you. Here you are fantasizing about beating children that you don't even have for reasons that you don't even know. Yeah, you turned out really well. Because all of this is like about defending the abuse of children. That seems really well adjusted. Now, there's two things kind of going on there, I think. Whenever people start talking about something where they make this suggestion that they have this longing for a golden age, the 50s, the 60s, whatever, where things used to be so much better and now everything is just so screwed up. People, as they get older, and we've talked about this before in other areas, get very comfortable with whatever belief system, political, cultural, ethical, let's put some quotes around that, and religious that they have. And when progress happens, or when change happens, or when something comes up that sort of rocks their, the fallout shelter that they live in, like this always reminds me of that Brendan Fraser and Christopher Walken movie, or I'm sorry, I mean, Christopher Walken movie, Blast from the Past, where the kid grows up in a fallout shelter, where he's sheltered from all of these changes that are going on in society around him. Now, you know, sometimes these things are evolutionary. Sometimes they're really good. Sometimes these changes are not good. Sometimes these changes are a step in the wrong direction. And then, of course, there's the movie Bubble Boy with Jake Gyllenhaal, where his mother, who's like this, you know, conservative Christian, keeps him in a bubble to protect him from the reality of the outside world. People do this with themselves. But this longing for a time that is gone, this is one of the discomforts of moving forward that a lot of people have. As the world progresses, as things advance, as new ideas and new trends come forward, a lot of people get really uncomfortable. They don't like change. They don't like progress. They're Luddites. And as the world that they're living in, as they're getting older, starts to make less and less sense, they have to create this kind of Bible-based fantasy to explain it. These are people who, because of the comfort that they have with some well-established belief system that they probably inherited from their parents, they're very fearful of the present day that they live in, and they're even more fearful for the future. And as what was once the future becomes the present, they get even more fearful. If it doesn't jive with what makes them so comfortable, so they create this biblical fantasy as kind of like this anxiety medication about the whole thing, right? It's like their childhood, when the way the belief system that they have was acceptable and everybody thought that way and there wasn't all these new trends and concerns and ideas that they didn't understand, that's like the Garden of Eden. They were like Adam and Eve. That was like paradise. So what they do is they create this dividing line, like this magical fruit moment that turned the Garden of Eden into Sodom and Gomorrah, which is the world that they're kind of tolerating today. And this is really quite confused and insane, this kind of thinking.
That's how we treated kids back in the 50s, and everything was fucking perfect. Unless you were black, or a woman, or a child, or a homosexual, or a Korean, or, I don't know, some kind of beatnik reefer addict. But we had television and hula hoops, and it was pretty good. Why did things have to get so complicated?
But when it goes to this subject of spanking, and when it goes to the subject of the treatment of children, or the discipline of children, something completely different going on there. Because one of my major goals in these conversations about raising children is to communicate the idea that I am totally against spanking. Now, this bothers people for some reason. And what they seem to be doing is creating this defense of the way we were raised. It was good enough for us, right? Like I said, good thing we don't say that. A good thing our, society or whatever doesn't have a habit of saying that about technology and medicine and automobiles and entertainment. But what a terrible tragedy that we do apply that to the way that children should be raised and the way that children should be treated. So the biblical fantasy, the magical fruit moment, is a kind of anxiety medication, one kind of anxiety medication. But this other thing is a much higher dose of that same medication. Because if the way children were treated, you know, from one generation to the next, evolved, became more enlightened, became more respectful, became more civilized, that older generation would be forced to look at their own childhood and say, what the hell was going on there?
Or their own parenting. Imagine that situation. Your dad spanked you, and you have a kid now. And you say, oh, Dad, we're not going to spank our kids. We're gonna take a different approach. What kind of message does that communicate to Dad about him as a parent?
And that can't be done. That's too uncomfortable. So they just say, oh, you know, spanking, mistreatment, I turned out fine. My kids turned out fine if their kids are old enough. So we can't look at the future. We can't look at a more enlightened way of doing things if it makes us uncomfortable about the things that were done to us. That's pretty much the gist of what they're saying. And this defense really comes out in full force on this subject of raising children. It's not so bad, like, when, like, I could accept the ideas of DVDs, even though I had collected over 500 VHS cassettes, because that was progress. And sure, yeah, like, it was frustrating. It was frustrating that I put all this time into, and money into buying VHS cassettes of all my favorite movies, and I would sit there, and, you know, when a good movie came on Bravo or a good movie came on HBO, I would queue up the VCR to tape it. I would program it. There's kids listening to this who have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, even right now.
Back when I was a kid, if you wanted to watch a movie, all you had to do was stick a big bulky cassette in a machine and hit play. You didn't have to read some menu first. Why did things have to get so complicated?
But that was frustrating. That sucked. When we had to get rid of VHS and go to DVD. But it wasn't an emotional crisis. Like if we saw some kind of major advancement in the way the children of today are treated versus the way we were treated. And the further back you go, the worse it gets. I mean, like, things are getting better, but people always talk about this mistreatment and spanking and discipline and bullying and terrifying children as if, like, it was better in the past. And that's why they didn't have all the problems that kids do today. And they're, you know, in really good shape, sitting there fantasizing about using violence against children. And wow, that was a long and winding, dusty road to a very simple point. But when I went back and I listened to the last episode of School Sucks Podcast, I felt a little bit like I sounded like maybe a slightly more enlightened version, hopefully, of that composite character. Based on the things that I know about my childhood and about my family now. And you can see that, like, even though I understand these things, you see the difficulty sometimes of this tug of war that many of us will have between the true self and the fantasy family that we wished we had, that we wished we had grown up in that environment. Of being treated fairly and being treated well. Sure, maybe. I mean, like, compared to, like, my friend's parents, my parents seemed awesome. But compared to, like, a standard for the future, I'm sorry. Not good enough. Not good enough. But this spanking, this mistreatment, this bullying of children, well, I think the results of that can come slowly, and they can come in a variety of different ways. Very, very simply put, when we're young and we're mistreated, we know it. Our entire childhood, and really, you know, not to drift too much away from my own experiences, and I will go back to that eventually in this series, but nobody's childhood is good. Nobody is properly raised. Nobody gets, like, an enlightened approach to parenting. Very, 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 very few people. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying there's people who aren't doing it. I shouldn't say nobody. That's a little too absolute. But I mean, if you're brought up into the public schools, you go into the church, you go, just like I did when I was your age. That's not enlightened, right? That's just running the same shit further into the future. Now, when we're young, we know we're being mistreated. We have no idea how to deal with those emotions in our own heads. We have no idea how to verbalize those feelings. So it's just taken inside. It starts to collect. It starts to build this frustration, this resentment. But most of that frustration, most of that resentment, most of that anger that there's no way to express, there's no way to verbalize, there's no way to let it out, there's no way to deal with it when we're little. It goes inside. It builds. We kind of marinate in it. But when we really start to see the results, when the results of this childhood trauma and mistreatment really start to show up, we're teenagers. And here comes the rebellion, right? Here comes the sneaking out. Here comes the experimentation with drugs and alcohol. Here comes promiscuity. Here comes, you know, all of these
limit testing behaviors. Well, now we're the same size as adults. We can drive cars. We can have jobs. They're not so impressive anymore. And all of that angst starts to come out. That is a product of the corporal punishment, the abuse, the physical and mental and emotional mistreatment of children that so many parents are guilty of. It probably shows up in the teen years first. Okay, there's this explosion. Now, let me stop right there for a minute so I can add this. I mentioned this tug of war that we have to win between, you know, truth and fantasy. But there's also this tightrope we have to walk as well, kind of the second event in this super challenging biathlon of exploration and self-discovery and honesty. And this tightrope that we walk is like, I point all these things out, that a lot of the rebelliousness of our adolescence stems from the mistreatment that all of us suffer as children. So if you're not careful, and I'm not saying this is you if you're in high school, but I'm saying this would have been me when I was in high school, I would be very thrilled that I just found an excuse that I could go and throw at my parents for why I'm doing these things. And if you're engaged in something that's particularly dangerous or risky or self-destructive, what you want is a way to, like, stop doing that, not an excuse for doing that. I think that that's an important thing to point out. So the tightrope that we walk is between knowing these things and being aware of these things and trying to work on these things and make progress with these things and just kind of throwing up our hands and saying, oh, I knew there was a reason why I was doing all this stuff. Because, like, things are done to us. And yeah, that's unfair and it's unfortunate, but they were done to us, to you. And however it happened, it kind of becomes your responsibility to do the necessary work of course correction. But the essential first step is understanding what the hell happened. Because it can be very confusing. And I think for most people, this really starts to show up when we're in high school. But that's not true for everybody. Some parents can still hold the leash pretty tight through the teen years. And they don't see a lot of those behaviors. They don't see the promiscuity. They don't see the drinking. They don't see the lying or the emotional outbursts about limits that are imposed. The kid is still pretty reined in. That happens a lot. I see that a lot. Wait till that kid gets to college, though. Maybe they make it a semester or two. Most of them get kicked out for poor academic performance. Often related to drinking, some, you know, maybe date rape. We see that a lot in college. Kids just can't deal with that freedom that is so all of a sudden. I didn't do so. My parents weren't that strict. They were stricter with me than they were with my brothers. I kind of loosened them up a little bit for my two younger brothers, one 3 years younger than me, one 5 years younger than me. But they were strict enough that when I got to college, oh man, that felt like freedom, and I really let loose. I really did not know how to handle so few limitations. So that's something we'll talk about in the future as well, like how to prepare for that transition. But you know what? There's plenty of people who get through college. No problem at all. No problem. You know, none of these behaviors. They're there to study, serious business. They want to be a doctor. They want to be a lawyer. They get good marks. They don't party too much. They don't, commit date rape. And they make it through. So that's all of that childhood emotion that has been bottled up is still somehow being held at bay, still somehow being restrained. Well, will we ever see the effects? For most people, yes. When they become adults. And this is where it is really catastrophic. And that's in the political realm. The participation, quote unquote, in decisions about how society should run and how society should work. This is manifest in two political parties today, where at the management level, at the master level, at the elected official level, we basically just have these complete sociopaths who are using stolen money to punish their punish their enemies and reward their friends. But at a participation level, at a voter level, at a worship level, we see two groups of people fantasizing about how they want aggression used against groups of people they don't like. That's all the political system is. That's all it is. It's not about doing good things. The healthcare, right? It's not about let's help poor people. It's about let's punish these greedy health insurance companies. Same thing on the other side with the immigration. It's not about even protectionism, which is like not a noble goal, but it's not even about any like sound economic ideas at the voter level. It's just about shooting these Mexicans as they cross this imaginary line. It's just hatred. It's just fantasies and ideations of violence and aggression that's been bottled up since childhood. Now, these things, you know, maybe some people aren't as bad. Maybe they were able to let a little bit of this out in college or let a little bit of this out in their teenage years. But there's still enough there. Isn't that amazing? There's still enough childhood angst left over by the time most of us become voting adults, if you aspire to be such a thing. There's still enough of that angst left over for an entire adulthood participating in the political process. It's absolutely amazing. And if you want to see the effects of aggression against children and the mistreatment of children in these people, start asking them questions about the political people or the political ideas they support. And boy, don't they become defense attorneys very quickly for a bunch of strangers who do not care about them at all, who are stealing their money and threatening them, and they pretend that none of that is happening, right? They jump to the defense of people who view them as livestock because they're comfortable there. Just like we did when we were, you know, asked about our parents. And like I said in the last show, I remember being in therapy. You know, I was like 21, I was having, you know, some problems in my own life that we'll probably get into in the future because I think it's relevant. And, you know, I started going to counseling. It was a great experience, but the therapist that I saw was, you know, he would probe me about these family issues, my parents' marriage, which at that time was ending in divorce. And, you know, I would tell these stories, and he would stop me and say, "Wow, you would be a great lawyer. You would just be an amazing lawyer because all you do is defend these people." If we stop being the defense attorney, we have to look at the truth. Maybe this happens in some discussion about our family life. For most people, it manifests in discussions about politics. It really exposes real feelings when there's that impulsive jump to support somebody. Our parents, our masters, whatever. We're trying to cover up the fact that we were treated unfairly, in some cases maliciously, in some cases viciously, in some cases abusively. Because if we see that, if we can admit that, we have to act. In the whole political realm, it's hard. In the family realm, it's even harder. I think that, you know, on the whole topic of politics, which I'm really tired of talking about, but there's really no way to avoid it in some of this stuff, we see why the people who are very comfortable within this political spectrum despise us so much. Because when we talk about, you know, non-aggression, and
we point out to them that they're just two groups of people fantasizing about using violence against people they don't like, that doesn't sit well.
When we expose this adult version of cowboys and Indians that they're playing and pretending that it's something civilized.
Like, here comes a reasonable person. Here comes a moral person. Here comes a consistent person to ruin a completely comfortable, rehearsed conversation that makes us both feel good. I'll tolerate your hypocrisies while you bark at me. If you tolerate my hypocrisies, well, I bark at you. That entire system that rises up out of the mistreatment of children is two groups of people in glass houses throwing stones at each other. We have a philosophy. We have a language that turns the glass in those houses into mirrors. And those people do not like what gets reflected back at them.
Because, at the very least, what the reflection sends back is the realization that, wow, I'm a hypocritical bullshit artist, continuously acting as the defense attorney in the trial where I should actually be the plaintiff, creating an endless string of explanations and rationalizations and excuses for the aggressor. That was an emergency. That needed to be done. There was no other way to solve that problem. We let this happen. We should have been more vigilant. We got too greedy. We got too lazy. This is our fault. We gave them the magic soap. But if they look really, really close, and most won't because most can't, what they will realize is that this whole system, this whole political system, the state, this kind of a catastrophe could only be made possible by consistent, multi-generational mistreatment of children. Up to this point, we've talked almost entirely on this show about school. But I'm hoping now you're at least starting to see the spectrum broaden a little bit. When we're little, we ingest a tremendous amount of poison. Government school, culture, religious fantasies, and of course all of the leftover trauma of the authority figures in our life that they can't funnel into politics kind of gets directed at us. As we choke and wonder, what the hell are you giving me? We're reassured that it's nutrition. Most people, really almost all people, are willing to go along with that, especially if it saves them from having to admit that they were poisoned by the people who were supposed to be nourishing them. And if during any point of this transmission of poison from the older, infected generation, who incidentally was poisoned in the exact same way, to the defenseless, young, impressionable new generation, if at any point in that process you point out that the quote-unquote nutrition tastes and smells and feels a lot more like poison, you will be labeled defective.
Round my hometown, maybe Maureen's a fringe. Round my hometown, ooh, the people I've made are the wonders of my world. Are the wonders of my world. Are the wonders of these world. Are the wonders of now.
shows that we ain't gonna stand shit. Show.